Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about the retro shows by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing okay. Retro Raw just continues to be bonkers, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know who was clamoring for another Inferno match. It certainly wasn't me, but I watched another Inferno match, and now there's a teddy bear on fire. And yes, I do know whose that is, and the whole thing is just going to be baffling to watch unfold. But yeah, I'm doing all right. How about yourself, Kenny?
I'm good, yeah. I'm good. Can't complain. Just, working away. But always happy to go back in the time machine and see what was going on this week in WWF. So it's the February 22nd, 1999 episode we're talking about. Obviously, last week we had The Rock win back the WWF title in the ladder match. So now we're on the road to WrestleMania, I guess. Mm-hmm. As always, we talk about the Heat episodes that happened. So just to run through quickly what happened on Heat the night before this show, we had Vince McMahon coming out with Kane telling us that, he will not be held hostage by this envelope, and that Kane is going to take him out in the Inferno match. He called Undertaker a vile miscreant. So there's that. Then we saw Shane McMahon training with China. We saw the Oddities taking on DOA and Too Much. And this was a 90-second match where DOA did a double suplex to Kurgan, and then Brian Christopher put on a pink motorcycle hat and leg-dropped Kurgan for the pinfall in 90 seconds.
Brian Christopher put on a pink motorcycle hat and leg-dropped Kurgan and won.
After a double suplex.
After a double suplex. Oh, DOA are so shite. Why is Kurgan just nothing now?
He's like, an oddity.
I am aware of that, but like I understand that he was not a very good professional wrestler, right? But he was a very big monster man who I feel like they could have used a little bit more effectively as a big monster man. They don't know how to book big monster men in this company.
Yeah, I don't think Kurgan is necessarily the example for that. But yes, and with him, they
I mean, he is my favorite, so of course I'm going to be biased. But like, I mean, I think we're even seeing some of it with the Big Nasty already. I was going to call him Big Show, but his name is Big Nasty Paul White, apparently, which Vince does not make sound less pornographic with his, like, I want to come all over you face.
This is true. So then we got Billy Gunn making out with Ryan Shamrock backstage because she, you know, does not give women a great look, is all I'm really saying about Ryan Shamrock.
She can do whatever she wants. I don't give a shit if she's making out with Billy Gunn. Like, I mean,
I'm telling you my opinion of that. And I'm saying she does not, so she goes to a show where her brother works and decides to sleep with one of the wrestlers, even though her brother initially had been like, probably a really bad idea for you, and he's a porn star. And she didn't even like figure out that the guy dumped somebody on live TV and thrown a battery at her. Then she gets dumped on live TV. Then she goes for the other wrestler. Like, she's a woman of poor choices.
I feel like Billy Gunn has been nice to her the whole time, though. I understand if she is dealing with the heartbreak over Val Venus, why she would want to run into the loving embrace of Billy Gunn.
Well, enough said about that. Ken Shamrock versus The Godfather lasts 45 seconds because it comes up on the we see Billy Gunn and Ryan Shamrock making out again. So Ken Shamrock runs to the back to presumably murder Billy Gunn and, I don't know, put his sister into like some sort of like, please make a good life choice at some point. Which
I feel like he just wants to lock her into a cupboard.
He's too far in that direction, yeah. Anyway, then we get Shane McMahon defend the European title against Goldberg, and he manages to beat him in 20 seconds with help from China.
But Goldberg is still the light heavyweight champion.
Yes.
For why?
Because he's a Goldberg knockoff.
I just can't.
So then we had X-Pac challenge Shane McMahon for WrestleMania. He was told he has to go through China first on Raw. We got Al Snow versus D'Lo, which lasted 2 minutes, which was funny because Al Snow got beat by D'Lo. D'Lo got beat by Al Snow with help from Deborah, Owen Hart, Jeff Jarrett, and Head. All the interference, okay. And the referee still did not. Deborah tried to distract him. Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett ran down to interfere and distract, and then Al Snow hit D'Lo with Head.
And the referee was still like, no, this seems fine.
He still managed to miss it all.
Impressive.
Mankind was pondering his future job prospects, saying that he could be a jet pilot, but he doesn't like the taste of hard liquor. He could go back to WCW, but he isn't quite old enough yet. But instead, he wants to be the referee of the main event at WrestleMania. He's got a petition for it. You know, all good things come from a petition. And then finally, we have the Big Boss Man versus Viscera in the main event, which lasts over a minute until there's a big schmoz at the end. And in the end, The Undertaker lights the ring on fire and cuts a promo about how the corporation are going to perish.
I love how much murder is threatened on these shows. Like, Vince in the opening promo on this one, wasn't he talking about, like, roasting flesh and all that kind of stuff?
That's it. It's all about the murders.
And, like, eating it? I mean, like, is he Hannibal now? Like, he just wants to roast people? Literally, and then consume them?
It's a thing. So anyway, so for this Raw, it's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Vince comes out to hype up the Inferno match between The Undertaker and Kane. He brings out Paul White, who's going to be the guest referee at WrestleMania. Michael Cole is continuing to try and get over the phrase, the big nasty.
They say it a whole bunch of times, and I just shake my head the whole time. The big nasty, Paul. Why did they think big nasty was going to be a thing?
I mean, Big Show is not much better. We've just heard it for long enough. But I think Big Show is better than Big Nasty.
I feel like Big Nasty it makes him sound like a poo.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So Paul White comes out, then The Rock comes out.
Are they just trying to be sexual with the Big Show?
No, I think it was meant to be. He's nasty. He's an angry, evil, nasty man.
As though he's one of the nasty boys.
Not that kind of nasty. Not like you smell nasty.
Oh, was that the Nasty Boys thing? I just know that they're big and pals with Hogan.
Well, their finishing move was the pit stop.
Ah, I see.
Where they would rub your armpit into your face into their armpit.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a pleasant thing. But I don't know, Big Nasty just there's no like good connotation that makes me think, yeah, like he's really formidable opponent, the Big Nasty Paul White. I feel like he's that just makes him sound like he either smells or wants to do sexual things to someone.
I guess so. So Vince brings out Paul White. Then we get The Rock coming out. Basically, there's a kind of confrontation here. The Rock's... It's actually quite a clever story that they're doing, which ultimately is really a swerve. But, you know, the idea that The Rock isn't happy, that Vince McMahon's new kind of project is The Big Show, and he's getting all the love and attention. So The Rock's obviously pretty pissed off about it because he's supposed to be the corporate champion, who's the focal point of everything. So they're kind of not happy with each other. Vince is trying to play the peacemaker. My favorite bit in the segment is where Paul White and The Rock are squaring off, and the fans are literally on their feet. It's like a very hot segment. And Paul White picks up Vince McMahon and moves him to another area of the ring. Picks him up and moves him like a child.
He does. Doesn't he call The Rock Pebble at one point too?
He does. He calls him a pebble because he could have been the pebble.
He could have been the pebble. The pebble Dwayne Johnson.
He could have been the stone.
I mean, all sorts of varieties of geological structure.
And it leads us to Mankind coming out. He wants to referee the WrestleMania main event. He also wants to referee that match tonight. Paul White challenges Rock to put his title on the line, so we're going to get it later on tonight. Paul White versus The Rock for the WWF title, seemingly with Mankind as the referee. What did you make of the opening segment and then kind of setting things up for the show?
I mean, it was a fine opening segment, I suppose, and it introduced Paul White a little bit more effectively than we've really seen him used so far. And they're really making him feel like a big deal. I guess I just didn't understand why The Rock was so angry at the big, nasty Paul White. Like, I understand that The Rock wants to be the center of attention and he's the corporate champion, but it's not like Paul White has done anything to him, right? Like,
he's
or am
taking
I just...
his spot.
But is he taking his spot? Because it doesn't seem like he's taking his spot. It seems like he's fulfilling another role. Like, The Rock is the corporate champion, and the big, nasty Paul White is another enforcer. If anything, he's taking the big boss man or Ken Shamrock's role.
Maybe we just saw it differently. I saw it as, you know, I think it's pretty clear. Like, Big Show is clearly Vince's new love. There's always a love story with Vince McMahon.
There is always a love story with Vince McMahon. I don't know. Angry about it seemed to just kind of come out of nowhere, which I guess later on when we find out it was a swerve to what end, I have no idea. We'll get to it. But it didn't really hit for me in terms of like understanding The Rock's motivation here, I guess. But I guess it's fine if you want to set up dissension with them and you can just kind of say, well, The Rock is a prick and that's why. So I guess that's fine.
Yeah, I thought it played pretty well and the crowd loved it. So good stuff for the start. Then we get the Public Enemy against Gangrel and Edge. Public Enemy, who are the worst tag team of all time, who have arrived from WCW. So I always love the idea. ECW had all this talent, and WWF and WCW both poached the Public Enemy.
I mean, they were atrocious. Mm-hmm. They were so bad. Like, I mean, I can't decide whether I love them completely or whether they're going to be the Godwins for me because they're so shite. But they were terrible. Like, their gear choices, like, I don't understand why they're wearing that. Like, they work for this big wrestling company. They should have access to better gear than, like, I don't know, jerseys that look like they've made by overzealous and under-talented community theater moms. Like, and it's such a knockoff of everything. Like, Road Dogg has already used 69 as a jersey joke. Like, you just, what even are the Public Enemy? What are they supposed to be?
I guess it's supposed to be like a grunge act. I don't know.
But like, all colors and stuff on their jersey does not scream grunge to me. It just screams, we had some leftover fabric from Fields, and this is what we came up with.
I mean, if you're going to ask me to, I will never be able to explain the Public Enemy to you. They're terrible. They're a terrible tag team.
Like Rocco, right? His name is Rocco.
Rocco Rock.
His name is Rocco Rock, because it said Rock on his jersey, and I was like, A, we already have a Rock, who's a lot more important than you. And B, if your name is Rocco, why does it say Rock on your jersey? I don't understand the Public Enemy.
They're so bad. Johnny Grunge and Rocco Rock. So anyway, they have a quick match. And there's a few kind of very sloppy double team moves, which you would expect from the Public Enemy. Christian interferes.
I mean, to even call them double team moves is generous. It really looked like they were just flailing about in proximity to one another.
But Christian interferes, which gives Public Enemy the DQ win. And then after the bout, the Brood beats them down, and then the Public Enemy get a bloodbath. This was like, I mean, like, this is the debut of the Public Enemy.
I mean, if you're trying to debut some stars and make them look like superstars, this is not the way to do it. However, we're dealing with the Public Enemy here, and I don't believe that the Public Enemy were ever going to be main event level superstars in the World Wrestling Federation. So it's not like I have a problem with it. But it didn't really seem to make the Brood any more interesting either, which I guess is more problematic because it was just kind of like, what was the point of this? And also, like, I can't help but notice every time the bloodbath is on the outside of the ring now and not inside the ring, and it's kind of frustrating because it's like, why do they conveniently go to the outside of the ring just so they can be bloodbathed? Bloodbathed?
Bloodbathed.
Bathed in blood.
Then we saw that the Undertaker has Acolytes and Midian beating up the Brood after the match in the backstage area because they lost, which I guess, okay.
I mean, are we supposed to think like, ooh, intrigue, dissension within the ministry? I'm very interested in that story because I'm not.
I think we're meant to see that the Undertaker wants victories because, and the idea is if you get victories...
And why
did
he choose Midian?
Well, he wasn't wrestling. This is the Brood we're talking about.
No, I know, but I'm saying just in general. If the Undertaker wants victories, he should have assembled a more effective crew.
This is true. Wait, the Brood are effective. Well, the Brood are not effective. Because Christian.
The Brood were not effective here.
But the idea, I guess, is that the Undertaker wanted the wins so he can get more money, so he can then take over the WWF.
Apparently, because he wants to own the World Wrestling Federation. But I still wonder, like, would he own it, or would the Greater Power own the World Wrestling Federation?
And if they own it, would there be more Midian?
I mean, I don't think anyone wants that.
Up next, though, we get a number one contendership match for the Intercontinental title. Val Venus is doing guest commentary for Ken Shamrock versus Billy Gunn. Val spends most of the match in commentary discussing how he used Ryan Shamrock to get the Intercontinental title. I mean, at least
he says, I used Ryan for a heck of a lot more than helping the big Val Boesky wrap gold around my waist. And Lynn Lawler's like, I think you used her up, didn't you? Ha ha! And Val Venus says, she's all used up. And, like, honestly, go die in a fire, Val Venus. Like, go to the Inferno match later tonight, set yourself on fire, and kindly perish. Because I cannot handle you anymore.
Her bad life choice continues to be shown on live television. Shamrock and Billy Gunn had a decent match. It was okay. Val Venus ends up interjecting himself by rolling Billy Gunn into the ring. Shamrock then attacks Valvinus. Then we get a brawl, and then the match is basically called off, I think. I don't know what the official word is, but they're further in the story, which is fine, but it's a weird story, because you've got Valvinus, who's the evil man that dumped a woman, then you get Ken Shamrock, who's kind of like, I guess in theory, the good guy, because he's like trying to protect his sister, but he's kind of gone too far with it, so he's not really a good guy, and then you get Billy.
But the thing is, he's supposed to be the heel.
I know,
so this isn't one of the situations where I'm like assigning the wrong roles. It's just that everyone's a heel except for Billy Gunn.
Yeah. I mean, Billy
Gunn's Valvinus is awful and dumped Ryan Shamrock and is talking about how he used her up. Like, she is literally just a prop for him to stick his penis in at this point so that he can get at Kim Shamrock. It's not even that he's like sticking his penis in her for any sort of reason other than like to annoy Ken Shamrock for whatever reason. Ken Shamrock basically thinks that he owns his sister and wants to put her in a cupboard. Billy Gunn is actually like kind of the nice guy. And if he and Ryan are going to be happy together, then I don't understand why that would be a problem.
For
anyone. Because you said that Ryan just keeps making bad life choices, but Billy Gunn doesn't seem like as bad of a life choice as, like,
right,
the
so
rest
but you,
of
but
them.
You have spent the last 6 months telling us how cretinous DX are and horrible are to women, and she has decided to go with one of the lead members of that group.
Well, he's the one I like the most, at least.
I'm just saying, if we're going by your theories, he's another bad choice.
That's true. He is in DX, and that's problematic because he does pal about with Triple H, who belongs in a bin. But I don't know. Like,
his
I
key
kind
phrase
of
that he tells everyone is to suck it.
You do have a point there. You definitely do have a point there.
I'm just saying.
She doesn't look like she would be adverse to sucking it, to be fair.
Anything I say to that makes me sound bad, so I'm not saying it. All I'm saying is Ryan Shamrock's poor life choices continue to dominate us here on Raw. The Rock.
And her bad acting continues to be a problem. I just, you know what? I don't understand why anyone will ever want to be with Valvinus because he's wearing like this really dingy towel with a t-shirt and a belt. Like, that's suspicious.
Then we get Vince McMahon.
I liked the match, though. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, match was pretty decent. Rock was telling Vince McMahon that he's the Joe of the corporation. He will fight the Big Show to prove his greatness. So, again, he is still wanting to be Vince's one and only true love. They should have brought back Shawn Michaels here and have an ultimate battle for Vince McMahon's heart.
They really should have, actually. That would have made sense. Like, I would like a backstage vignette of Shawn Michaels just explaining, you know, how to deal with a cranky lover, Vince McMahon. But yeah, The Rock is still just, I guess I could just explain it as The Rock's just kind of being a prick and wants all of the attention, even though he's in this big corporation where there are tons of people. So I don't really know what he was expecting.
Then we get highlights of Sable doing media appearances. Kevin Kelly's interviewing her. Kevin Kelly is holding her title.
Kevin Kelly has recovered the women's belt. Get that man in the Hall of Fame. I don't know where she left the belt because she has not had it in quite a while. She just keeps coming out in her cat suit. So Kevin Kelly, apparently intrepid reporter, went on assignment and decided to recover the women's belt as though it was something that matters because it should fucking matter because it's a title in the World Wrestling Federation and Sable drives me insane. Go on.
She's putting herself over. Then she sees Tori. So we finally get to know that she's Tori. She says that she admires Sable. The whole thing is about Sable basically wanting Tori to fawn over her. Sable just wants validation of how amazing she is. That is what Sable wants in life now.
She does, but I mean, like, she asks Tori, like, what her name is, or I forget how it all goes down, but she, like, Tori introduces herself and is just like, Sable, I'm such a big fan of you. You're so beautiful, blah, blah, blah. And Sable's just like, you can never be like me. You're never going to be as good as me, skank. And I'm like, I don't understand why Tori is a skank here for wanting to be your fan. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's not like she has slept with loads of men to be like, yeah, maybe she did. Maybe she was like, that's the way I get to be like Sable. I don't know. But it was a very weird insult to me. And I wasn't a big fan. I mean, I know that I'm not supposed to be a big fan of Sable here. Like, she is supposed to be a heel, but she's not great at being a heel either. She's just more annoying at this point, and I kind of wish that she could go away and we could have women who are more talented than her in this position.
I mean, there really, at this point, is no need for a women's championship.
No, because they have done nothing with it. Like, I mean, Kevin Kelly had to go recover it from whatever bin it was in.
Yeah, I think it's a weird thing because they tried to like give the belt for Sable essentially, and then she, I guess, didn't want to wrestle. It's a whole thing. It eventually brings
Jerry up... Lawler has another line here where he's like, "No woman really cares about another woman when it comes to men." And sadly, this line of commentary would continue throughout Jerry Lawler's career into his babyface run, where he would continue to say that all women be crazy and bless Renee Young on that one episode of, I forget if it was on a pre-show or something, where she called him out on it. Still one of my favorite moments where Renee Young shut his ass down.
What did he say?
It was something like, you know, women, you can't trust one another, or like, you know, like no woman is ever really going to get along, because it was some sort of women's feud and I can't remember which one. But Renee Young was like, no, I think that is antiquated thought. You know, women are here to support one another. I mean, here in the WWE, you know, we're really pushing for, and this was like during kind of like pushing for women's evolution time. And he's still saying these things. And she was like, no, like, that's not the way things are. Women support each other in the locker room. Like, women want to be happy for one another and build each other up. And he was just kind of like, meh, meh, meh.
So basically this ends up bringing out Luna Vachon. Luna says that Sable's looks are the only reason that she's the women's champion. Luna and Tori go to leave, but Sable ends up hitting them with the women's belt. The thing that makes me laugh is, like, I think the idea here is that Sable's supposed to be a heel, but she's just hit, like, Luna, who the last time we saw her was a heel, and Tori, who nobody knows. So the crowd still pretty much like Sable.
Well, because the whole point of Sable is to look good in her outfits and be hot, right? Like, that is why she is presented to the crowd. That has not changed. People don't care about her in terms of, like, her character motivation or her as a human. They care about her as a prop to look at. And her being mean to two other women is not going to change the fact that she's still a very pretty prop to look at, and that's how she's presented on the show, which is infuriating. It really bothered me that Luna had to come out here, and I'm trying to remember exactly what she said, like, verbiage wise, but didn't she say, like, you know, Sable, we can't all look like you, or something like that? She almost was like putting herself down and saying that she could never be as good as Sable. And Luna's so amazing. Like, I love Luna Vachon. I think she's great. I think she's like, she was incredibly talented as a wrestler, and like as a character, I find her very compelling. And so for her to basically come out and be like, well, I know that I can never look like you, Sable, or I can never be as good as you, was just kind of off-putting to me. And it was almost like she was trying to defend Tori and be like, no, obviously we can't like be the glory that is Sable or something like that. It was weird.
This was Anita Girl Next Door. I mean, it's,
and no, I don't,
Sable's not even the girl.
Sable's
next
door. Not at all. So I don't.
She's like the mum that wants to fuck her high school son's best friend.
Yes, basically. Yep. And it just, the whole thing just reeks of men writing for women and not understanding women's motivations, and also treating women like we're some sort of different class of person because we can't have actual motivations of our own if it's not about a man.
So back to men's song, just so we can keep your attention. Vince McMahon tries to get Paul White to back out of the match, but the Big Nasty says he's just looking to make an impact and he wants to be the figurehead of the corporation, so the love struggle continues. Then we get a match that's a handicap match, D'Lo Brown versus Double J, Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart. And then D'Lo's basically wrestling the tag champs in street clothes. For whatever reason. It's not.
Why was this a handicap match? Where's Mark Henry?
He's got a knee injury, apparently.
Oh. So they just put D'Lo in a handicap match?
Yep.
For why?
I guess he's not got any pals?
Apparently not.
But D'Lo, so D'Lo's basically trying his best here, 2-on-1. And then, of course, Jacqueline and Terry come out. And then Jacqueline gives D'Lo a brilliant missile drop kick to the back of his head while the referee's not looking, and that allows Jarrett and Owen to get the win, and then they do an extended kind of beatdown on D'Lo after the match before the referees intervene. So PMS are continuing to mess with D'Lo Brown for his fake causing of a fake miscarriage.
Which I still don't understand the original motivation for Jacqueline and Terry to fuck with D'Lo Brown. Like, I mean, Terry faking a miscarriage and whatnot was just to fuck with D'Lo Brown and to make him do things for her. And I guess the takeaway is supposed to be that women be crazy and just want to fuck with people. I I guess is the moral of the story, which is not a great moral of the story, in my opinion. But I thought, I mean, the match itself was good. Like, Jeff Jarrett, Owen Hart, and D'Lo Brown are all very good at wrestling, so I was actually kind of enjoying this match. And then, like, the interference from Jacqueline, I thought, was really well timed in terms of the referee being distracted. And because was the referee distracted by Deborah? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, I think she was distracted, or the referee, he was distracted by Deborah. So then Jacqueline got that drop kick. And I thought the drop kick was actually really good, too. Like, I want to see Jacqueline do more. I would like to see more of Jacqueline actually being in the ring. Like, she might not be the best wrestler in the world, but she is capable of wrestling. So I guess I just don't really understand the point of why PMS are so insistent on fucking with D'Lo Brown, but apparently they are, and that's a thing. I'm still bummed because I really liked Jacqueline and Terry when they first came together, and now they just, I don't understand what they're even on about.
They are the worst, which is a shame that they kind of committed with good intentions, and now they're like the bad stereotype of what they're trying to say that women aren't.
Yeah, like, and that's the frustrating thing, is that they had a really cool, like, origin story of, you know, being wronged by men and then coming together and being like, no, we're going to avenge ourselves and we're going to stand up for ourselves and we're going to be autonomous. And I love that. And now, like, they are just the crazy bitches who want to fuck with you. And that's disappointing.
Up next is the apparent WWF Championship match between The Rock and The Big Nasty, with Mankind as a special guest referee. Vince is trying to stop the match, but The Rock's having none of it, so Vince is going to do commentary. And then Big Show does, like, one big pie face to The Rock, and then Big Show attacks Mankind. Rock joins in. It was a ruse all along. They beat down Mankind, and Vince McMahon stands tall at the end. I mean, it was an angle. It lasted, like, 2-3 minutes. It was fine. I was curious why Austin didn't come out here at any point, or was on the show, to make a save, but he wasn't.
Was he just not there or something? Because he wasn't on the show at all, was he?
No, he wasn't there at all. So, but
see, I just don't understand. This is the kind of stuff that frustrates me in the Attitude Era when we're watching, because, like, I don't know, Mankind being the guest referee, like, Sacco in stripes was adorable. Mankind backstage in little vignettes, like, painting his own ref shirt, because of course he does, because he's Mankind and he's adorable, right? Like, he's great. But I don't really understand the point of setting up The Rock versus The Big Show early on in the show, and then, like, halfway through the show, it's just revealed that it's a ruse. This is kind of what I talk about when, you know, to have a payoff like this, or to have some sort of, you know, emotional investment in a story like this, you have to have stakes and you have to set them up and you have to actually build them. And I was not that invested in The Rock versus The Big Show in the first place. And also, like, I mean, pitting The Rock against The Big Show is like heel versus heel, which is kind of annoying anyway. But like, okay, so they have dissension and they're going to have a match and Mankind's a special guest referee, and now they're just attacking Mankind. Like, we've seen Mankind get attacked. We've seen Mankind get beaten down. This isn't new. And I don't really understand why they're still just trying to fuck with Mankind. Like, what was their goal here? Was it just to fuck with Mankind? Was that the entire purpose? Because I don't really think that the payoff was worth it in that case.
Yeah, I think the goal was just they get Mankind in the ring together and they try and beat him up.
I mean, it's basically like, we need to get heat on the corporation. The corporation already has plenty of heat. You're all cretins. Nobody likes you. Like, it's fine. We don't need to establish that you're cretins. You are.
What I found interesting here is what ended up happening was you were seeing the fans are starting to get behind The Rock. Like, it's not there yet. It's not like where he's a babyface yet, but it's starting to happen.
You put him against, like, the new big corporation monster man, then yeah, I mean, the fans are going to be more behind The Rock than they're going to be behind Vince or The Big Show. And if Rock seems to be at odds with Vince, then you are kind of risking people getting more behind The Rock, because The Rock is charismatic and is, you know, very entertaining. I don't like him very much. I don't like The Rock as a character, but he is a very entertaining character and he is very effective at what he does. So it makes sense that the crowd was starting to get behind him. It's just, I don't know, angles like this kind of sour me on Retro Raw and on the Attitude Era, because it's just like, I don't like when it's like, oh, it was just a ruse all along just to fuck with the audience and just to fuck with characters. Like, it's one thing if there's a good setup to it and a satisfying payoff that is, you know, in some way involves emotional investment. But this wasn't that. It just felt like a waste of time.
I think you may have been a little bit too harsh on it from my point of view, but I think there's two things at play. Number one, it was a different time, not in the sense of it's 1999, but, like, they were going up against WCW. Every mm-hmm. show has to have tons and tons of stuff on it. It has to hook you for every hour all the time. So I kind of give them a bit of a buy for doing more stuff. But I think really there's a balance to be said for, because like when you watch shows nowadays, like you watch a Raw or a SmackDown, and it's like you could kind of miss a couple of weeks, and most of the time there's not really anything that you've missed. Like you can kind of get it. Whereas here, so I think today's thing could do with some stuff like this, but because they did this stuff all the time, it meant a lot less. Like if this was the only swerve in like the first 6 months of 1999, it'd be fine. Mm-hmm. But it's like one of 20. So,
well, I feel like we've seen it done effectively recently. Like balance wise, I think NXT has done it more effectively than the main roster. But we've also seen some stuff on the main roster where it has worked, right? Like bringing out Corporate Charlotte or.
Well, you know, but I mean, the last time, I can't remember the last time the main roster did something that good for that was really shocking and big and stuff like that. Whereas, I think that's what I'm saying. I think back then in 99, because they had such like competition going on all the time, they did it all the time. Now they don't really have any competition, so they don't really feel the need to do it. You know? And I think that if they could strike a balance, it'd be good. I mean, like, for example, I just looked up there, this episode of Raw did 6,508,000 viewers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wrestling was a lot more popular back then.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the other thing is when you're targeting like a younger demographic, they want like high energy, high octane stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like I love some really old movies, but it's like if you watch an old horror movie like Halloween, there's one scary bit every like 15 to 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and the rest of it's just suspense. And like, if you show that to somebody now, they kind of go, huh? That's a bit boring.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, it's trying to find the balance. But so we have that angle. Austin wasn't there, which was weird. I don't know why he wasn't there.
The crowd was chanting for Austin, weren't they?
Yeah, they wanted Austin. Then we got Steve Blackman versus Draws. Oh, for fuck's sake, why?
The match everyone was clamoring for. I mean, I guess, you know, that incredible story that they're telling. At least there is a story to point to, but like seriously, the whole Draws being angry that Steve Blackman assisted Kevin Kelly after Kevin Kelly called Draws a punk. Kevin Kelly called Draws a punk. I'm so emotionally invested in Draws now being angry at Kevin Kelly. Oh, he's so shit.
I actually just wanted to check this while we were talking. I just looked up some stuff here, and Austin apparently was in the building.
He just didn't show up?
After the cameras went off the air, Austin came out and drank beer. And then The Rock came out and did a thing where they were teasing they were going to drink beer together. And then Austin obviously stunned him. So even more of a strange choice as to why he was not out there to help Mankind.
Yeah, because you'd think that he would actually help Mankind. I mean, that makes it even more baffling, because I would have liked to see that. But I guess the whole point of the segment, because I can't find any other point to this particular swerve, is to, you know, make Mankind look pathetic and make the corporation look like dicks. And I guess if Austin came out, then it would like rob some of the heat from the corporation, brother.
So yeah, Steve Blackman versus Draws was terrible. Steve Blackman wins with a kick at like 3 minutes. Oh my God.
It felt like I aged during this 3 minutes. Like, it was just not good at all.
And then Draws does get his heat back afterwards by attacking and choking Steve Blackman with his own martial arts sticks. I was wishing he would do that to me so I'd be unconscious and wouldn't have to watch these two ever again.
I mean, the story continues. Draws and Steve Blackman have this heated rivalry now, Kenny.
They do.
Just what everyone wanted to see. You know, I will give the Attitude Era, you know, credit here. There is a reason that they were fighting. It's just, it's Draws and Steve Blackman, and who could possibly care?
Not me.
Nope.
The Undertaker's warning Vince McMahon backstage that he, Vince McMahon's not there with him, but he's basically warning Vince McMahon that he'll have bigger problems with him in the ministry than Stone Cold Steve Austin. An Inferno match will not get rid of him, and he's got a surprise for Vince later in the show. So again, I guess just something to keep you watching to see what it is.
It's the Undertaker's like monotone ministry promos, though. He's just like, and I'm so creepy backstage, and I have these powers, and I serve a greater power, and I'm gonna own you. And I mean, basically the whole story of the show has been Vince McMahon saying that the Undertaker is gonna burn in hell and burn alive, and his flesh is gonna be roasted, and the Undertaker being like, nope, I will not.
I did like it at the end of the show when Vince was like, are you here to see rotting flesh, because that's what you're gonna get.
Yeah,
what a sell.
So much murder is threatened in the World Wrestling Federation.
Lots of murder. Goldust takes on Val Venus in a non-title match. this is a Gold Dust match, so you know, you kind of get what you get out of it. But
I appreciate that his gear has gotten better.
It's the small victories in life, isn't it?
You know, because I mean, it has the black in front of the crotch instead of like the shiny gold that accentuates too many things, and it's also a better material. So he's really upgraded his gear game. Like, this is the Gold Dust outfit that I appreciate.
The Blue Meanie ends up coming out, which you would think he was going to do something to Goldust, but he ends up giving Val Venus a DDT in the arena floor, which ends up giving Goldust the win. So Blue Meanie, I guess, is now on Goldust's side.
Which doesn't make any sense. Like, I had praised the internal consistency of the story of, you know, Goldust stealing head and the Blue Meanie stealing head back from Goldust and becoming Blue Dust and stealing everyone's powers and whatnot. I don't understand what's happening now, because the Blue Meanie's motivations are completely unclear to me. They just fought. Like,
if you can't beat them, join them?
But is he really that concerned with Gold Dust? Like, why? Why is he that obsessed with Gold Dust specifically? And also, like, I was kind of confused too, because Gold Dust gets the win here. Val Venus is the Intercontinental Champion. I didn't remember if they had announced it as a title match or not. It seems like most of the time when people are fighting on Raw, it seems to be for the title, and then there's disqualification or there's interference or something like that. But they like to advertise title matches, right? Because I think that that would push ratings a little bit more than non-title matches. So then when Goldust just wins, I was like, is he the Intercontinental Champion now? Is this a thing? But it wasn't. And I was just kind of confused by the whole thing. And I don't understand why the Blue Meanie is now on Goldust's side, or is the Blue Meanie just against Val Venus? But I don't think Blue Meanie and Val Venus have really interacted all that much for Blue Meanie to be angry at Val Venus. So I don't really know what's going on with this story.
And I guess we'll see. I obviously know how everything plays out, so I can't really say anything. But that's what we've got.
I just wanted the Blue Meanie to keep stealing people's powers. This is far less interesting.
China and X-Pac are both preparing separately backstage. Shane McMahon is flexing in a mirror as China looks on, like, engagingly. She deserves her raise.
She's supporting him. And also, did you notice, this is the weirdest detail, but in this segment where they're, like, in the mirror or whatever, where they're training or whatever, Shane McMahon's shirt says ex-chump and not ex-punk like it does later in the night.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
Because I know I only noticed it because it said ex-chump, and I was like, he doesn't call him ex-chump, he calls him ex-punk. That's weird. I guess he's doing a new nickname every night. But then later on in the promo, later on in the night, he does call him ex-chump, but his shirt still says ex-punk, and I don't know why I latched onto this detail, but I did.
So then we have...
I kind of almost like the interplay between China and Shane at this point. Like,
it's fun, it they've got good chemistry together.
They kind of do. And, you know, Shane McMahon having bravado and having the European Championship, like, he is a cretin and he is a prick. And yes, I want to see him lose that belt because he should not be a champion. But I don't know, like, China supporting him is actually more of an interesting character dynamic than I thought it would be.
So I'm just going to absolutely rant over this because it's so stupid. So Bart Gunn won the Brawl for All by mistake.
He did.
He wasn't supposed to win Brawl for All. He won Brawl for All.
Well, that's the problem with scripting a shoot fight in the middle of wrestling.
But take it one better. So then Bart Gunn is not on TV for like 6 months, presumably because he's training to try and get good to beat somebody in a Brawl for All fight at some point. Cough, Butterbean, cough. So then he comes out here to have a hardcore title match with Bob Holly where his knockout punches do not work. And he is beaten in 8 minutes. So we're meant to believe that Bart Gunn, who is going to eventually be going up against somebody legitimate, couldn't get the win and was pinned by Bob Holly.
It makes no sense. I mean, I liked last week when Bart Gunn came out to challenge Bob Holly because, you know, they're former tag team partners. I love a good NWA reference because it's just one of my favorite things. So, you know, this is the explosion of the new Midnight Express. And I think that there was a compelling story to tell there. I think there was a compelling story to tell with Bart Gunn winning the Brawl for All kind of by accident, you know, and they sort of started to tell that story with Bart Gunn interrupting people on commentary and being like, no, you underestimated me. I'm the best. I'm a killer. I'm going to knock people out, all that kind of stuff. And then he just disappeared for so long, right? And so for him to come out and be like, hey, I want to challenge Bob Holly because he's the only one that I didn't knock out in the Brawl for All. Like, he still beat Bob Holly, but he didn't knock him out. And so the whole story, if you're trying to build up Bart Gunn to something, should be that he knocks out Bob Holly. But I guess they want to keep the hardcore championship on Bob Holly, which is fine. But then don't book this fucking match. Like, why would you even do this? Or have Bob Holly win it with, like, you know, weapons and stuff. But Bart Gunn does land offense on Bob Holly and it doesn't work. So it's just, it really highlights the disconnect between presenting like a shoot fight and then presenting a wrestling match where you're like basically flashing in neon letters above this match. This is scripted, guys. Don't worry. This one's fake, but we'll get back to some real stuff later.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. It took me out at the moment. And like, I didn't even remember that this had happened, but now watching it back, just kind of going, wow, you just didn't give Bart Gunn a chance from the beginning, did you?
Like, no, not at all. And then they have him get attacked by a mysterious...
A masked man attacks him, yeah.
Masked man afterward, and we don't know who that is or what it could mean. I have a guess, but I don't know, I suppose, because they did not reveal the masked man's identity or anything like that. But yeah, so they have Bart Gunn get attacked, so I guess I'm intrigued. Like, I forget, did the masked man interfering, did that cause the loss? Yeah, because he threw him
off the edge of the stage into a table.
Off the edge of the stage into a table, right. So, I mean, the thing is, I don't have a problem necessarily with Bob Holly winning in that manner. My problem is more that, like, Bart Gunn landed punches on Bob Holly that didn't work, and then I guess there wasn't enough interference. Like, if it would have been more interference, or if it would have gone quicker, or, you know, Bart Gunn got thrown off the edge of the stage by this masked man, and you're setting up something between Bart Gunn and masked man over here, and that allows Bob Holly to get the win, but it really felt like it was more interference driven, I think I would have less of a problem with it. But because the match was as long as it was, and it just wasn't very good either, it just got boring. Like, I remember just being on my phone for most of this match because they just were kind of brawling and hitting each other with stuff, and it hardcore matches like this get very repetitive. And it, I think when we first started seeing some of the hardcore matches on Retro Raw, they were a little more interesting because it was a departure from what we were used to. But now that we see them all the time, it's just like, okay, kendo stick, yep, baking tray, neat, bin. Okay.
It's funny because, like, they work for me, I think, a lot more than they work for you. But then yeah. That's like if I, like, if, like, say I watched like a 205 live, I feel like I'm watching the same stuff all the time. So I guess it's like, if you're not into a certain kind of match, then
yeah,
maybe just
this kind of match has never really been for me.
Yeah.
So without like investment in a story, like if I get, you know, two characters that I'm super invested in, like Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, for instance, and they're doing this kind of weapon stuff, then I'm still invested in the story behind it. And so every weapon shot feels like it means something because of, you know, the drama and the emotion between two people. The explosion of the new Midnight Express lacked that emotional gravitas for me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, for me, whenever you use a crate of bananas and a watermelon, I'm all in.
I did like the watermelon. That's a fair point. I did like the watermelon being smashed. But yeah, I guess there is some intrigue. I think maybe just because I kind of love Bart Gunn, because he's so nondescript, like, he really just looks like generic white dude. There's something about him that I just enjoy, because he's so bland. But I'm probably the only person who's like, yes, I really want to find out more about this masked man and Bart Gunn.
So then we have X-Pac versus China. The whole story here is that if China beats X-Pac, then Shane McMahon will not have to defend his European title against him at WrestleMania. X-Pac chases Shane around the ring. And I know you're going to hate this because you hate Triple H and all that, but I thought what they did here was very clever, because Triple H is the guy that got screwed by China, right? Initially. Mm-hmm. Was it X-Pac or Triple H?
I want to say it was X-Pac, but I don't know. I think it was X-Pac, because didn't X-Pac just keep getting screwed over by everyone?
Well, because remember China came out and did the promo about, you know, and she specifically was talking to Triple H, like, you know, sweetheart and all this kind of stuff. And
no, in the promo, she was specifically talking to Triple H. I'm just trying to remember who she originally turned on.
Okay, so, but the whole premise of the turn was her turning on Triple H, right? Because they had been together for 2 or 3 years, whatever.
Yeah, and like in their mixed tag, I think like during Kane and China versus X-Pac and Triple H, like they were mentioning, like, you know, Triple H and China being soulmates. They were best friends for so long and all sorts of stuff. So really the story is between China and Triple H is what they're portraying.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we've not really had any sort of resolution to that, right? We've not really had, you know, China got the win at St. Valentine's Day Massacre. But what they did here, when they kind of had, you know, they're going to have a match. Are they really going to have a match? And then X-Pac chases Shane around the ring. Triple H runs in, gives China the pedigree, and then X-Pac's able to then get the win to go to WrestleMania to face Shane. I thought the story was pretty good. It was a nice little bit of revenge for the Triple H character. X-Pac, who's kind of, you're right, being screwed by everybody, like Shawn Michaels and everybody.
Because Kane was awful to X-Pac too. Like, X-Pac legitimately was just trying to help Kane that one time, and Kane was like, nope, choke slam.
Exactly. So I thought it was a well done thing. What did you think? I mean, I have a feeling I know, but what did you make of it?
I mean, I would like to throw Triple H in the bin. Like, I don't like him. However, I don't hate this as much as you think I would, because I think the story of X-Pac trying to get revenge on Shane McMahon is actually a good one. I wish that there weren't this disconnect, because I don't like DX, but like, because X-Pac's been screwed over. As long as X-Pac doesn't speak, and as long as Triple H is not as much a part of the story, I actually think it's very entertaining. And X-Pac and Shane kind of being at odds, like, X-Pac has a reason to be annoyed with Shane, right? Like, Shane won via nefarious means his European championship that X-Pac worked so hard for. So I think there is a story building here that makes me sympathetic toward X-Pac, and, you know, him getting the victory kind of worked for me in a weird way, except for the fact that I really like China and I want China to win, and I'm just confused. I'm more confused than angry, because it's like the characters that I like are at odds with one another and partnering with other characters that I don't like. Like, Shane is an insufferable prick. So yes, I want to see Shane get beaten, but Shane is teaming with China, who's like my favorite. And then X-Pac is becoming sympathetic, but he's teaming with Triple H, who belongs in a bin. So the whole thing is just, it's an emotional jumble in my head. But I think the story did play out pretty well. And, you know, what they're presenting to me, I understand what they're doing.
So then we go from that to where we get told that Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be on Nash Bridges on CBS. So
get excited.
Get excited. Vince McMahon comes out to do a promo here for the main event. Says, The Undertaker has killed his parents, scarred his brother, and no one dares threaten Vince McMahon in that kind of manner. And then he says, if any of you here don't want to see rotting human flesh, please leave now.
And what's, I mean, funny, they're really just amping up the murder.
Nobody leaves. One person.
Everyone wants to see roasted, rotting human flesh. Yep. Wrestling.
I think they see if you go and see like a Raw or something like that. Like, an Inferno match is a pretty cool thing I'd imagine to see live, because it's like fire around the ring.
Well, and you could probably like feel the heat, because I remember, you know, when they used to have more pyro at shows and whatnot, like when the Usos would come out, it was very like loud and you could actually feel the heat even if you're sitting not very close to it. So it probably would be a lot cooler to see live than it would be on television. One of the things that I don't understand about the Ministry, like, I don't know, before we get into the match and all the shenanigans and whatnot, like, part of what doesn't work for me about this story is that it's heel versus heel. And I find that to be a bit problematic, because I don't have a rooted interest in seeing either one of these groups win. And I guess you're kind of supposed to be on the Ministry side, maybe, because Vince McMahon is, you know, the big bad, like, he is evil. Not because we know he's a higher power, but like, because he's, you know, he's awful. He's Vince McMahon. He's terrible. But the Undertaker and the Ministry are also heels. Like, they have been attacking good people. They have just been kind of dicks to everyone. They're doing blood sacrifices for whatever reason. So it's hard for me to want Undertaker or Kane to win. Like, I guess you're supposed to be rooting for the Undertaker here, but he is kind of an awful cult leader as well. So, like, are we supposed to be rooting for the Ministry at this point for some reason? Like, just by default?
I don't know. Do you know, it's funny. Like, I've been trying to think the last couple of weeks about, you know how, like, we talk a lot of people talk about how, you know, the Attitude Era is... I mean, like, it's a very weird thing, because you can't really watch it. We've seen this a lot. You can't really watch it 20 years later and get the same effect of everything. Like, my friend Andrew, I went to uni with, he'd never watched wrestling before, right? And he watched the WrestleMania 6 match with Hogan and Warrior.
Yeah.
And he was just like, I don't get it. But it's hard, because all the wrestling he's ever seen is modern wrestling, where it's very fast-paced and very high energy. But I think one of the things that maybe comes down to is that, because on these shows there's something always happening, whether it's good or bad, people are always talking about it. Like, I remember I'd phone Jamie all the time, or he'd phone me, or we'd talk about whatever. And I feel like sometimes now on the main roster, like I say, stuff happens now and then, and, you know, we analyze it every week. But it's, I think if you're like a teenager or something, it's not it's not as high paced as it needs to be. It's very like, you know, a lot of video packages, a lot of recaps, or like somebody will do something and you don't really find out what they've done for like 4 weeks or whatever it is. Whereas here, it's just, it's the opposite direction. It's just like, here's 42 things in an episode of Heat.
Yeah.
And you're like,
well, and I think that's what we were talking about in terms of balance. Like, I think there's criticism to be made of the Attitude Era for putting too much at once, because then nothing has the stakes that it really should. And I think there's criticism of, you know, like nowadays, I feel like more stuff happens than sometimes people give it credit for. Like, people are talking about like Becky Lynch showing up on Raw and getting her face broken and, you know, those kinds of things. And I feel like those moments have a lot more impact nowadays because they don't happen quite as often and they pick and choose their spots a little bit better. But you're right. I mean, there are definitely some weeks where Raw feels like it is just an eon and nothing happens at all. So it's, I don't know. There's a balance to be struck, I guess.
Well, like,
I don't
want to. Nowadays, what they do a lot of times is like, so like back in these days, you know, you'll see a pay-per-view, stuff happens, and then the next night, a ton of stuff happens. Whereas sometimes now it's like, you'll get this really big pay-per-view moment and everyone tunes in to see what happens and they don't give you any resolution yet. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that, like, I hate to say this, that is part of Vince Russo's booking that could be decent today. Now, he should never be hired or rehired. But no. I refuse to believe there's not somebody in the world who could take the good elements of his booking and put it into today.
Well, who was that writer that was doing really, really well on SmackDown for a while?
Ryan Ward.
I was like, it was Ryan something.
Used to be in NXT.
Yeah. And I feel like he, for a while on SmackDown, I would say that SmackDown was achieving that. Like, I think that you did get payoffs on things every week. I think that stories did grow and progress and change. And then, I don't know. Like, I mean, we don't know the backstage politics. Everyone thinks that it's like Road Dogg took over and got shit. Like, we don't know what happened and who moved around and, you know, what.
It's basically a game of who can convince Vince the best.
Yeah.
To do the best thing. That's essentially.
Yeah. Or, like, can you get Vince to not pay attention while you actually, like, create these compelling stories sort of under the radar sometimes? And, I mean, I don't want to say, like, Vince McMahon is useless and trash or whatnot, but, like, there are some times that when he's a little more hands-off and people kind of are allowed to breathe a little bit more, that things get really good. And that's why some of the best stories that WWE have told in recent years have been the accidental ones. And when WWE capitalizes on those stories, I think it's great. And I don't always want to sound like I'm disparaging the Attitude Era or if I'm supposed to, like, be the champion for the modern era. But I feel like there are some people who glorify the Attitude Era so much and are like, wrestling is never going to be as good as it was back then. Like, there's a lot of shit in the Attitude Era too. There's a lot of shit today. I don't even know that I prefer one way over the other. I just think that there is a balance to be struck. And right now, like, the Attitude Era is throwing just too much all at once and nothing feels like it has the stakes that they really should. Like, the payoffs don't feel as big or as meaningful to me personally. And that's why sometimes I'm not always trying to say
Sondra just said something was bad, so I'm going to counteract why it was good. Like, I'm just saying, as someone, like, as me who has watched both, here's just my interpretation of it, because I think, like, sometimes,
yeah, and that's totally fine,
because sometimes, like, by default, it's not a bad thing. You are kind of the voice of people who didn't watch it the first time. And yeah. I'm the voice who did, of people who did. So, but I think the main thing that everybody should be able to agree on is, like, if the shows could have the atmosphere of, like, back then, where everybody was on their feet, like, for, I mean, really the test is Steve Blackman was bad, because even on a Raw in Toronto, in front of a stadium, there were crickets for him.
Yes.
Over any accurate era, Steve Blackman has done.
But I guess, like, I mean, this whole discussion started because I don't understand the logic behind booking, like, a big program and your main event program right now, because the corporation versus the ministry seems to be kind of like the big thing, right?
Yeah.
And the big thing, the corporation versus the ministry, is a heel faction versus another heel faction. And I don't understand how the crowd is supposed to be invested. And I think that's some of the attitude in the mind of Vince Russo that I would criticize is, like, I understand that he's going for more shades of gray and he's going for more storytelling as opposed to, like, good guy versus bad guy. But if I'm going to see two people fighting, I want one of them to win. And in the corporation versus the ministry, I don't want either one to win because I think they're all terrible people. It's like seeing Val Venus versus Ken Shamrock, right? Like, they're both terrible people. I want them to just stop being so mean to Ryan.
Yeah. So let's get to the Inferno match. So we got Undertaker versus Kane. The first couple of minutes of the Inferno match are always pretty fun because it's just like a, you hear the noise and they see the fire. And when
there's bumps, the fire like rises up makes the noise.
I did love when Vince was like, why is the fire not on? Why is the fire not on? Like, he was just like enraged that 5 seconds had gone by as we tried to heat up the machines because Vince McMahon does not know how fire works. The match.
I mean, Vince is on commentary just like aching for an actual murder to be committed in his ring.
Yes. So
he's like, put the Undertaker near the flames, burn his flesh, Kane. Bah.
This was essentially a much shorter version of an Undertaker Kane match, which I'm a big fan of a shorter version for sure.
Yes. This one was better because it did not go as long.
Bells and
there was
whistles
a lot more
and shorter. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, the biggest story of the match is when Paul Bearer brings a black box, a gift to Vince McMahon. Vince isn't going to open it, and then Jerry Lawler keeps going, are you going to open it? Are you going to open it? Are you going to open it?
Well, and they're talking about the paperwork, too. They keep asking Vince what was in that document that The Undertaker presented to Shane, and Vince just keeps going, it's personal, it's personal.
So, in the end, Vince opens it, and it's got a teddy bear. Now, did you twig immediately what the teddy bear was? Do you even now know what the teddy bear means?
I think I know to whom the teddy bear refers. Or, like, to whom it belonged.
Okay, but do you want to say who, and I'll say if you're right?
Is it Stephanie?
It is a childhood bear of Stephanie McMahon's.
Yes.
That is the...
Okay.
Now,
because that's what I thought that the teddy bear was. Stephanie McMahon, who is 22 years of age at this point in 1999. So I'm kind of intrigued to see how this plays out, because I know that there's, like, a bear, and I know she gets kidnapped and almost married at some point. So seeing how that progresses is going to be kind of intriguing.
It's going to be so weird seeing cute young Stephanie who looks lovable and lovely.
Right? It's going to be very baffling to see, like, a cute, innocent Stephanie McMahon.
So Vince gets the bear. He's clutching it. Kane misses a big boot. The action goes to the outside, and Kane's foot
Vince
ends
decides
up
to do some acting.
Yeah, and Kane's foot goes on fire, so Undertaker gets the win. And then Undertaker approaches Vince, takes the teddy bear, sets it on fire as Vince screams, why? Like, at the time, I remember watching this going, what? Like, what does the teddy bear represent? Because obviously at that point, you don't really think of Stephanie. Like,
well, no,
she's never
Stephanie
been
McMahon,
TV.
She's been on TV one time in the background of one segment,
oh, yeah,
right?
She did a cameo, yeah. But she's never been a character. She's never been a named character, so...
Not at all. So that's kind of, you would never think that it would be her. And this seems like one of those things where it's almost, like, I don't know, if I were watching this for the first time and I didn't know some of where this goes, I feel like this is almost so over the top that I'd be like, what the actual fuck is happening? And just be like, this seems really stupid. Like, this seems like a forced plot point. That I might be super into, because I'm like, a burning teddy bear? Okay, sure. Like, why is Vince McMahon so obsessed with a teddy bear? Like, Vince McMahon, who wants actual murder on his television program. Vince McMahon, who wants to dismember Shawn Michaels and eviscerate Stone Cold Steve Austin, is, like, reduced to tears and wailing over a teddy bear for whatever reason. Like, I don't know what's happening. I think it would be one of those situations where I just, like, I turn off the TV and go, what? Like, I mean, do you remember watching it the first time? Were you like, oh, I really want to find out who the teddy bear belonged to? Or are you just kind of like, what the fuck?
I think it was an exact 50-50 split.
Okay.
Exact. But the other thing that was weird is, and this is, like, I remember times where I would watch a two-hour episode of Raw and I'd almost be in pain that I'd have to wait a week. Mm-hmm. Like, because you didn't have anything else. Or you had, like, Shotgun. But, like, who the fuck cares? I can, like, hold over while Blue Meanie beats a jobber. Like, who cares? So, and we didn't get Heat. So, I think at that point, that's the difference between, like, now it's like, you know, you're never clamoring for more. But back
no,
then
because
you
they
were.
Present to us all of the content all of the
all
time.
All the content, but...
Yes, and there's so much wrestling. Like, it's just a very different landscape. But it... I mean, that's just good serial episodic storytelling in general. Like, that expands to other forms, like, not just wrestling. Like, when I watch an episode of The Blacklist, for instance, I'm like, oh my gosh, I really want to find out what happens next with this thing. Or, you know, when you read comic books, you want to find out what happens next. You want to find out, like on my old Superman radio shows, like how is he going to get out of this predicament where he is, you know, buried with some kryptonite under the ocean and he's going to starve to death and what's going to happen, you know? Like that's how serial storytelling should work, is to leave you wanting more while still telling you good stories that are self-contained. And it's a hard balance to strike. So, I mean, whose teddy bear is it, I guess, is a cliffhanger for us.
So overall, what did you make of this episode and where would your thumb be?
I didn't like this episode. It was a thumbs down for me. Just there was a lot of storytelling stuff that didn't make sense. And I'm not into the corporation versus ministry because of the heel versus heel dynamic and all of that. Like, I think some of the stuff they did was effective, but overall, like, I had to watch this one in three sittings and I just wasn't that into it. So it's a thumbs down.
Do you know what's funny is the Toronto Raw, the one where Austin got beat down by the corporation, after that show went off the air, they had The Undertaker and Mankind come out and save Austin, and the three of them drank beers together.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
For me,
that's kind of baffling from like a storytelling perspective.
Well, because I don't know how this is meant to be. The ministry are kind of meant to be the babyfaces right now.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, like they are, but they're not. Like, it's just confusing. It's more confusing than compelling.
For me, it's a thumbs in the middle show. I'd say it's like a 5 out of 10. There was enough interesting stuff on it to have me watch it, but it didn't quite break the bar into. I mean, there was like Steve Blackman versus Draws. The Goldust Val Venus match wasn't very good. The Bob Holly Bart Gunn finish was baffling. But I really liked the Rock and Big Show stuff and the Inferno match shenanigans. Listen, I'm all for kidnapping and teddy bears being set on fire. More of this, please. Bring this stuff in.
Yeah, if you're going to make it a soap opera, go all the way with it for sure.
Make it Days of Our Lives or Coronation Street or whatever country you got, or Home and Away, whatever country.
Passions.
Exactly. So that's it from us. There's not really much news this week. St. Valentine's Day Massacre did 450,000 buys. That's about all that I really have.
Good or bad?
I think it's good. On the episode of That 70s Show that Rock, Shamrock, Ernie Ladd, and the Hardy Boys were in, it was the highest rating ever for that show.
I really need to watch that episode.
And Dave Meltzer did note on this particular week that there was rumours that Austin was going to do a match with Goldberg, but there's nothing to the rumours. I would love to have been a fly on the wall when they asked him to do a match with Goldberg. Love it.
A match with Goldberg. Why the fuck would Austin do a match with Goldberg?
I assume he just went, I didn't do one with Mark Mero, so not doing one with Goldberg.
That seems like, are they really trying to capitalize on like the Austin Goldberg similarities there? Like, would that be their mindset? Because that's the only reason I could think of like putting Austin with Goldberg, other than just to have Goldberg be squashed or whatever, but
yeah, who knows?
Baffling.
Anyway, to play us out, let's play who did well this week?
I guess let's just play Stephanie's theme because it's good and she has a teddy bear.
Wait, our current theme?
Yep.
Okay, we'll play the current theme of Stephanie McMahon, who's not a character yet in Retro Raw. This breaks all the rules. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Style and grace, I'm never gonna be done. Lean on in. Now, welcome to the kingdom. The kingdom, where the kings bow down.
Lips, hair, walks with a flair like she just don't care. Nobody do her like she do her. Self-made, so paid, do an actor. She stop, do, stare, chicks do too. Bounce, so bounce, never ever gon' lose. Her top-down crew so smooth, nothing better. Boom to the letter, you got to respect her. Mamacita off the meter, she a go-getter. With the speed of a cheetah, legit and better. So hot, they sweat her like a sweater in a sauna. Elegant persona, ready for drama. Zeros and commas all up in the bank book. Haters give a stank looks, even when these cranks push, she push harder. No woman or man does it like she can, and you can't put a dent in her.